A year ago, a state commission examining New York's alcoholic beverage control laws released a comprehensive report with recommendations for updating New York's blue laws, some of which are a remnant of the Prohibition era. And while policymakers have yet to fully embrace the group's findings, the recently adopted state budget does include some tweaks to where you can buy alcohol. To discuss those changes, as well as other opportunities to reform state laws governing alcohol sales, we're joined by Scott Wexler, Executive Director of the 2,500-member Empire State Restaurant and Tavern Association. Welcome back to the Capitol Press Room, Scott.
Thank you, David.
So as I mentioned in the introduction, the state budget doesn't dramatically overhaul the state's blue laws, but there are some changes that impact the consumer experience and the experience of retailers as well. Starting with the former, what was done to impact where, and I guess the types of alcohol that New Yorkers over the age of 21 can buy?
Well, the state budget does include three changes in that regard. The first, which was a priority of the governor, is extending the authority of restaurants and bars to sell drinks to go until 2030. This was a provision created during the pandemic when bars were essentially, restaurants were closed. And it's been helpful for some establishments. It was a lifeline during the pandemic. It's become popular for some establishments and for some customers. And so the governor pushed to have that extended for another 5 years. So it will continue as a privilege for restaurants and bars and our customers until 2030. The second one is probably more dramatic in that the state is now going to allow movie theaters to sell beer, wine, mead, braggot, and liquor. For a number of years, movie theaters in the states have been seeking to add those beverages to the list of products they can offer customers. Movie theaters have become more entertainment venues. The more that you can provide for your customer, the greater opportunity you have to have them enjoy your facility. The state budget did include language that for a temporary basis, it has a 3-year sunset on this provision. And it has some special restrictions regarding the hours of sale in movie theaters and how many drinks a customer can have. But still, it's really important that we're now leveling the playing field and letting more establishments that would like to allow consumers to have beverages do so. Then the final change in this regard is also during the pandemic, the state created a greater flexibility for restaurants to have outdoor dining and have alcohol beverage service in these outdoor areas, including in areas that were governed by municipalities that weren't contiguous or weren't directly attached to the restaurant. Think a plaza in between a couple of streets near a restaurant or several restaurants. The state budget extends that law, but also it fixes a problem for folks, particularly in New York City, where if your dining area had a bike lane in between the restaurant, it was no longer available. So for some restaurants, that was a competitive issue. So three changes that will allow consumers to enjoy their beverages in different places for a little bit longer.
Let's unpack some of those proposals. And starting with the drinks to go, you mentioned that for some restaurants, this has been part of their business model since the pandemic. Do you have a sense of what types of establishments have pivoted to this and really embraced it? Are there certain characteristics that make a facility more inclined to go all in on this, or the type of patrons that would be inclined to utilize this?
In our typical members establishment, we prefer the customers to be in the establishment. So promoting drinks to go is counterintuitive to their normal operation. So most of our members have either stopped entirely doing drinks to go or are truly utilizing it as only a minor part of their business enterprise. The types of members that we are seeing still engaging in this as a regular part of their marketing or their operation tend to be places either with more crafted cocktail lounges where there is something special about getting the old-fashioned made by the bartender rather than buying it in the cocktail in a can available at the liquor store down the block. It's also particularly popular, I think, in some of our establishments in more urban areas, in particular in New York City, and I would even go more hyper-local in Manhattan. for some places, it's still important. But for most of our establishments, drinks to go has become a non-significant part of their economic business operation.
Well, turning then to the movie theater front, it seems like this has been an area that has evolved in recent years, because I've definitely seen some alcoholic beverages for sale right here in the Capital Region, my home cinema in Saratoga Springs. I know my parents have had a cocktail, but maybe not necessarily before going into the theater. So is this primarily about some logistical changes as well as changes to the types of products that people can consume and where they can consume them?
I think at the end of the day, the New York State legislature and policymakers has struggled to find and are always struggling to find the balance between the flexibility in providing consumers with beverages that they choose to drink in what environments. Mm-hmm. And certain parts of the state are more concerned about public safety and nightlife impinging on the community. Certain parts of the state are more concerned about economic development. Certain communities are more interested. So I think what you've been witnessing, Dave, is a constant evolution of that. I think the fact that movie theaters were given some limited ability a number of years ago, certain movie theaters, has made it possible to expand it. But at the end of the day, there are still tremendous restrictions. Only one drink per person at a time, which means that my wife and I have to go up and get each of our individual drinks, limits on the hours of sale in movie theaters. So it's just, I think, part of a slow evolving process. I would describe it as one step forward and sometimes two steps back.
And even though this language is included in the budget, people shouldn't expect a dramatic change in their local movie theater tomorrow, right? I have to imagine they're going to have to go through some sort of licensing process with state regulators.
That's correct. They'll, now that the law will change and will make it available, these establishments will have to be licensed and permitted. But the State Liquor Authority is really on top of a lot of those matters, particularly if you don't have a complicated license application. I would imagine that movie theater licenses would be among the least complicated, more along the line of a grocery or convenience store license than a full-scale bar license. Because of the restrictions, because movie theaters are typically not located in the middle of a residential neighborhood where you have to worry about parking and noise and other factors. So I would say you could look forward to seeing cocktails in your movie theaters this spring or summer even.
So what was in the state budget that deals with the licensing of alcoholic retailers?
Yeah, for me, the changes in the budget regarding licensing are really the hidden gems. We're constantly hearing about delays in liquor licenses by the State Liquor Authority, which I would pin mostly on not having adequate resources to serve the community of interested applicants. And the Liquor Authority is constantly looking and trying to improve on that. This budget includes a number of provisions that will certainly help make things better. To begin with, it extends for another year the ability of the SLA to issue temporary permits for applicants. Most applicants, if it's not a controversial application, can probably get a temporary permit within 30 to 60 days of filing a complete application. It may take 6, 8, 9 months to get your permanent application, but once you have your temporary application, you're in business. So keeping that going was a really important measure. Also, very importantly, the budget includes a provision to eliminate the 30-day waiting period that an applicant must go through after they notify the local government they plan to apply for a liquor license. This was a built-in 30-day delay in getting a license. Back in the day, and if there ever was a day when liquor licenses were issued in 5 or 6 weeks and local governments didn't have adequate time to respond, perhaps a delay was appropriate. But when it's taking months to get liquor licenses issued, not having to have a waiting period at the front end is definitely going to help every new applicant. And then a small piece of the process is creating a temporary wholesale license. The more wholesale licensees we have, the more choices we have for the retailers and who they purchase products for, and the more products that consumers might be able to purchase. So creating a temporary license for wholesalers will help put those folks in business sooner as well. All of those things are good for the marketplace.
Well, it seems like there are a variety of alcohol law changes that could be tackled in addition to what we've discussed, which would have the support of a vast majority of industry stakeholders based on the report from last year from the commission studying New York's alcoholic beverage control laws. So with the time we have left, is there anything in particular that you'd like to see tackled in 2024 that you think has a broad base of support?
Well, there are four recommendations from the commission that haven't gotten a fair airing that I would certainly hope that the legislature will consider and vote up or down on at some point in the near future. Most important to our members is the proposal to allow restaurants and bars to make small purchases from liquor stores. When your favorite restaurant runs out of your preferred spirits on a Friday night, they can't count on getting that restocked until Monday or Tuesday of the following week. And there's a proposal that came out of the commission that would allow those establishments to replenish their stock up to 12 bottles in a week, very small amount. It's still going to come from the same wholesale suppliers because we have a monopoly in the wholesale market where every brand is limited to be sold by one wholesaler. So there's going to be no loss of business for the suppliers. It'll just make it easier for the bars and restaurants and more hospitable for you and I as consumers. Also, two changes for liquor stores that would seem to make sense. The first would be to establish a good cause standard for granting a liquor store license. Probably the thing that takes the most time at the State Liquor Authority regular board meetings is the hearings they have about whether to grant a new liquor store license, because of the complicated standard. For many years, restaurants and bars have had this good cause standard. The commission recommended it. We think it makes a lot of sense. Also, if you're a liquor store and you want to have a second store, the law prohibits you from doing so. That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. We don't want chained. We don't want to have big 20 and 30 store chains in the liquor store industry, perhaps. But allowing a successful liquor store to have a second operation was recommended by the commission. It is a substantial change in the way we do things right now. Mm-hmm. But lots of liquor stores are in closely held groups throughout the state. This would allow me, if I were a liquor store owner, to open a second store without having to get a family member to be the person filling out the application.
Okay.
And it's only a second store. Finally, the state has spent a lot of money and put a lot of effort into creating a craft spirits and craft cider business. But because of the monopoly of the wholesalers and how small these craft producers are, these folks have a hard time getting access to the marketplace. The commission split 8-8 on whether they should be allowed to sell their products directly to consumers. To us, it makes sense to allow small distillers like Albany Distilling to sell their products directly to you and I, at least until they get up and become bigger competitors that can afford to make the investment that the wholesalers require.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Scott Wexler. He is the executive director of the Empire State Restaurant and Tavern Association. Scott, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. Have a great day.
And for more Capital Press Room content, visit capitalpressroom.org or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. And if you listen to us from an Apple device, make sure to leave us a rating and a review so it helps other people find the show.
Support for the Capital Press Room provided by Better Buildings New York. Better Buildings New York supports clean, healthy, zero-emissions buildings and thermal energy networks. It's in favor of the New York Heat Act. More information at betterbuildingsnewyork.org.